I don't know anyone that's ever built wealth or gotten rich holding a ton of cash, right? Especially for an extended amount of time. You can look in Warren Buffett, will liquidate certain positions on a periodic basis and sit on cash for a while. But if you look at where his wealth has come from, it's the generation or the accumulation of the value of the assets that he hadn't liquidated, right? The stock that he continued to hold. So the ability to stay the course or to create an artificial inhibitor that would prevent you from liquidating too soon, that's my bias towards private investments as opposed to the traditional stock market and things like that.
What if you could reclaim hours of free time each week, create legacy building wealth, and devote more energy to your passion projects without giving up on your career as a life-saving MD? Dr. Vikram Raya is a functional cardiologist, high-performance coach, and real estate expert, is here to give you the tools, strategies, and solutions you need to transform your life, unlock your limitless potential, and achieve greatness, all while freeing up your precious time. Welcome to Limitless MD. Let's dive in.
All right, guys. I have my next guest, Christian Metwa, who's a Zimbabwean financial advisor who has the ability to help ultra affluent families reach the next level of success. So you're going to love this podcast episode. We talk about legacy. We're going to talk about figuring out investments that the Wall Street advisors don't tell you about. We're going to talk about how people in the sub $1 million bracket invest, the $1 to $3 million bracket invest, and then the $3 plus million bracket invest. So if you've always been curious about how the ultra affluent think about money, how they grow their money, how they preserve their money, and how they give their money to the next generation, this is an episode you don't want to miss. We have a master of legacy, master of finance, and master of purpose who's joining us with Christian.
Hey, Chris. Christian, good to see you, brother.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited because of the nexus of different categories you play in. I mean, there's entertainment, there's education, there's social media influence, there's sort of exclusive elite investments, there's sort of the rags to the riches story. So there's so many places we can start, man.
Well, I'm here for it. Wherever you want to go, I'm ready.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're considered a sort of a force in finance and leadership and legacy, but let's start with your origin story. You came from Zimbabwe.
That's right. Yeah.
So how the heck did you get in the United States? And what?
Yeah, really funny.
Where we are.
Typical immigrant story, I guess you could say. Born in a third world country, young single mom. Well, youngest of four kids, I guess. I wasn't her first, but in search of opportunity. Well, America is the land of exactly that. So we came here, landed in Nashville, Tennessee, and that's where I grew up. And as the youngest of four, I look the least like my siblings, both in terms of accent and, you know, just the culture I was exposed to. For all intents and purposes, I'm American, but being the youngest of four, I've had the privilege of getting to see what their life has looked like also, you know, being immigrants and for them just being a little bit older when they moved here.
That's awesome. So you're in Nashville. Did you think your life would end up where it is now?
Maybe in some ways. I've been privileged and fortunate to do a lot of really cool stuff, and that was always in the plans. I think the how has looked quite a bit different than what I initially expected, but I'm grateful nonetheless.
Yeah. So let's get into this. Your African roots and your heritage, even though you lived most of your life in the United States, has that played a huge role? Because I was two when I got here, so I was not too far behind you. I was 24 months when I came to the United States. Yeah. And yes, I've grown up mostly in the U.S., but the Indian roots and heritage have played a big role for me.
Totally, 100%. One thing you can't escape growing up in an African household is that culture, the influence, and the aggressive pursuit of excellence, I'd say a lot of us immigrants share. And that's exactly what I grew up with, both athletically, academically, really in all aspects of life. There was no, you know, giving half your best. Everything required the best because it's the reason we're all here. Right? You've got to take advantage of the opportunity in front of you for sure.
And, you know, as you fast forward to the future part of your life, is that immigrant edge, that mentality, do you think that's how you're able to start hang out with high performers in different categories of life?
Yeah, 100%. That coupled with the fact that I was an athlete growing up, there's this deep-rooted sense of competitiveness that I've got built in me, as well as innovation, I guess, if you will. Truth be told, I actually don't think I'm that smart or that unique of an innovator. But I mentioned this, being the youngest of four, I've had the privilege of seeing people older than me succeed and fail. So in my life, I've done a good job of taking the best and leaving the rest. I try to pick up success clues as I see them, implement them into my own world. Doesn't mean I'm perfect, but I think that's one of the reasons why I've been able to find myself in the rooms that I have been, serve the people that I have, and learn and do a lot as much as I have up to this point.
So you're the head of Synergy Private along with your partner, and you also have a company called Tax Alchemy. Can you talk about how those two companies intertwine?
Yeah, totally. So Tax Alchemy is a brand most people would actually know a lot larger and more than Synergy. That was started by my business partner, Carlton Dennis. He's clearly a foremost tax professional in the world as it relates to education and strategy around how to minimize and mitigate your tax exposure. One of the things we realized as he and I built a friendship and now to what I'd consider, you know, being family, is taxes opens a door to this ecosystem of financial needs that only gets more and more complex the higher your wealth continues to grow. And in that, again, success leaves clues. One of the things we recognized, and I had this perspective being a wealth advisor at the same time he was growing his tax practice, is that at the highest levels, the ultra affluent tend to create or join these family office ecosystems that support them in a 360-degree relationship. So not just their taxes and planning and things like that, but maybe it's banking, maybe it's investing, even some of the legal affairs and, you know, lifestyle things. Those are the things that ultimately propel a founder, an entrepreneur, an athlete, or an entertainer to flourish, because it allows them to focus more on what they're doing as opposed to navigating the business that is their life simultaneously. So in today's world, Tax Alchemy is the tax practice that serves its own clients independently, as well as Synergy Private families. And Synergy Private is a company that provides family office services and support to our most ultra affluent families, typically with a net worth deep into the eight figures, if not nine figures.
Okay. So, you know, you talk about a top-down approach to wealth for minorities. Can you unpack what that means, specifically when you're trying to really take care of these ultra affluent folks? What is that top-down? How does that translate?
Totally. I used to think of it almost like a funnel, which is, I think, where the top-down nomenclature came from. But in today's world, I've given a number of talks where I talk about this, these phases of the wealth cycle. And to me, there are four phases of the wealth cycle. It's how you generate your wealth, so the income that's coming in and going out on a day-in and day-out basis. Then there's some excess that's created, and it goes on the balance sheet, and you eventually want to grow your balance sheet. So you invest that and hope to accumulate more. Phase three is where you utilize that, whether during your lifetime, and maybe it's personally, of course, lifestyle, but also philanthropically and things that people want to support. And eventually, you know, if you do it well, you're going to have an estate worth preserving. So passing that on to the next gen and disposing, the disposition of your assets and your resources. Those four phases, generation, accumulation, utilization, and disposition, are these phases of the wealth cycle that Synergy is there to support. So typically for first gen families, think athlete or entertainer that's just made it, or, you know, founder that's finally exited their business, or even someone that's just lived or worked a very healthy career. And they've been really disciplined with their resources, so much so that there's more than they thought they would need to manage. We help navigate all four phases for them and streamline the process of ultimately supporting their end goals.
So those four phases are generation.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth generation.
Wealth accumulation.
Accumulation. Generation, accumulation.
Utilization.
Utilization and disposition.
You got okay. It.
That's cool, man. I like that. Okay. And listeners, depending on where you are in your journey, think about how to get to the next level, right? And companies like Synergy and Tax Alchemy, they can sort of guide you in, like, hey, here's what you're doing well, here's what we can improve upon, right? Sort of like a professional services evaluation and consultation kind of thing.
That's exactly it. And they're in that order for a reason, right? You don't start with wealth disposition until you have any wealth to dispose of, right?
Right. Some people are so worried about their tax situation when they're not earning enough income, or,
exactly. You
know, there's not a lot of incongruence sometimes in our approach when we really need to do it in the right order.
100%. And that's why wealth generation is where we start. Once you have an income that creates a big tax problem, the taxes is where you begin to start. And then if you manage that well, you're going to have an
People are so sometimes fixated on taxes that they need to they need to actually have more of a problem to work on.
Correct. I agree.
Let me ask you a question. You know, as you know, some of the top physicians in the country listen to this podcast, a lot of high income earners and entrepreneurs. What do you think is the most common myth physicians and high earners believe about money?
I think they often don't view themselves as a, I'll use a term, I don't think that this is really going to shock them, almost like an artist, right? And or talent, if you will. We think of talent in the sense of an artist, an entertainer, an athlete, these people that are paid for their talents. Truth be told, medical professionals are the exact same. You guys go to school for a really long time to learn these really intricate skills and this education that you then deploy in the workplace. Things that I can't do and others without, you know, the letters after our names that you guys have, we can't do that. So if you view yourself as a talent, you almost start looking at yourself the same way LeBron does. He says, I'm not a businessman. I am the business.
Yeah.
And whether you work at a major hospital system or you have a W-2, that's irrelevant. You can manage your life as a business or as an entrepreneur being this talent. And that might mean you, you know, play for a team, which happens to be your hospital, the same way that NFL and NBA athletes are on a W-2. But it also means that you'll have these ancillary opportunities to generate and maximize your wealth over time if you start thinking of yourself as a business, not just an employee.
Yeah, I like that. I like thinking about that differently versus like, hey, I have a job. No, I am the business. I'm the CEO of my life, if you will, right? And, you know, we've talked about that. If you're CEO of your life, how would you treat your life differently than if you're just like a cog in a wheel?
Totally.
The term wealth gets thrown around a lot. What's wealth mean to you? And how do you define true wealth beyond just numbers?
That's a great question. I would define wealth as freedom. And freedom to me is being able to do what I want with who I want whenever I want. So when you reach a point where the majority, of course, not all of your time, but the majority of your time can be spent doing what you want with who you want, whenever you want. That's a level of freedom that most people aspire to. And that to me is when you've achieved wealth. And that doesn't have much to do with numbers because, you know, if you're in Costa Rica, that's a very different reality than if you're in Singapore.
You know, I was listening to this influencer, Alex Ramosi, who I follow, and he talks about for him, wealth is living unhurried life. Like people who are not free and who are scarce in some category of their life, they have to abide by other people's timelines.
That's right.
And the people who are truly free, they define their own timelines. It's they live an unhurried life. And I'm like, oh, I like that, you know?
I'm late a lot of places and I love it when wherever I'm going waits for me. That to me sounds like wealth and freedom.
Exactly. All right. I want to get into some tactical strategies because, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there and it's good. It's good to learn about people's stories or origins and, you know, what the company's about. But I really want to give our listeners something tangible, you know, that they can go home with. So here's a couple of questions. You know, let's say you lead a firm with $1 billion of, you know, AUM, ultra affluent clients. I don't know what your AUM is for your clients, but do you actually take and manage the AUM of the clients or are you finding opportunities where they invest and you guide them, advise them, first of
all? Great question. So it depends on the family. The answer is both. We have resources that we manage on a discretionary basis. Those are typically things like retirement dollars, philanthropic dollars, monies that aren't going to be touched for a while anyway. It's easier to delegate that because the evaluation of should I do X versus Y is very different for dollars that I can't touch anyway, as opposed to the dollars that I need or that are liquid or that I use to run my business, right? So an athlete or entertainer that has a certain lifestyle that they're used to, dollars outside of a retirement account or outside of their foundation, we don't manage on a discretionary basis. We would bring them opportunities or ideas and allow them to self-select what they're going to execute on. Because as a business owner, you can think of the same thing. It's like, well, can I do this myself? If so, why do I need to invest in that person or that business? And if I can't do this myself, is the return that investment or opportunity is potentially is likely to give me greater than what I could do myself if I kept that that money liquid or, you know, in my own bank account? So that's typically how we think about it.
Okay. Now, what core principles do you believe apply to physicians and entrepreneurs, like in terms of like how they think about their excess cash?
Yeah, it's a great question. The first of which is breaking the belief that, you know, cash is king, right? So to a degree, Everybody needs an emergency fund. Everybody needs some form of liquidity, access to resources. Cash is certainly in those regards. But at the same time, I don't know anyone that's ever built wealth or gotten rich holding a ton of cash, right? Especially for an extended amount of time. You can look in Warren Buffett, will liquidate certain positions on a periodic basis and sit on cash for a while. But if you look at where his wealth has come from, it's the generation or the accumulation of the value of the assets that he hadn't liquidated, right? The stock that he continued to hold. So that being the case, I think tactically, the ability to stay the course or to create an artificial inhibitor that would prevent you from liquidating too soon, that's my bias towards private investments as opposed to the traditional stock market and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because stocks you can trade in and out of. And if you turn on any news outlet in the world, they'll scare you into thinking that things are as high as they're ever going to be and things are on their way down sharply and you should get out. But the reality is people who stayed the course, either because they've, you know, thwarted against those temptations or they're because they're invested in assets that won't allow them to cash out, they're the ones that tend to see the most return.
Let's talk about frameworks. I want three frameworks. Let's say maybe either income or net worth. Which one is better for you when I give you three different tiers?
Both, maybe. We can do income.
Okay, let's do income. So if you're a sub $1 million earner, like let's say you make $500,000 to $1 million, let's talk about the game plan for wealth creation. And then let's say you're between 1 to 3 million. Mm-hmm. And then the people who make maybe 3 to 5, like,
yeah, totally.
How do you take these tiers?
So if I'm putting myself in the shoes of someone that makes $500,000 to $1 million a year, chances are they run a very small business or they're an employee, right? And by employee, I mean, just the majority of their income comes from like a W-2 or something like that. That's not a bad thing. It just means that they don't have the autonomy and authority to be as discretionary with their resources as someone else, meaning, if I have a W-2, I can't just go hire some staff and delegate and efficiency, so on and so forth. Even if I have my own business, but I'm not netting more than $500,000, chances are I don't have enough excess to reinvest in creating more income and marketing and these things that, you know, expand your income. So I would say for those folks, automations are the things that actually accelerate them because they can focus on what's continuing to bring them that healthy income while allowing these automations to help build their net worth.
Automatic. You're talking about like investing, correct. Like automatic deposits, like automatic investment vehicles. That's, and then maybe some robo investing or.
Exactly. Really low cost stuff that happens like in your sleep, right? You don't have to make a decision every time you want to do it. Even things like your emergency fund, building that up, your retirement accounts, which both help in investing and your tax situation in some cases. Philanthropy. Most people realize that you can automate your philanthropy with things like a donor advised fund. So by automating these contributions and the investments alongside them simultaneously, one day you'll wake up with a level of freedom. Maybe it's a vacation or you name it, and you look at your accounts and you're like, whoa, this is great. And that puts you in a new phase of thinking. From 1 million to a couple million, you're at a point now where chances are, if you didn't already, you certainly have a tax problem every single year income wise. So being really thematic around how you approach that, mitigate your exposure, but simultaneously try to find strategies that bring your tax liability down and have the potential to increase your net worth, either by creating cash flow or asset appreciation, you name it. Doing that also will likely put you in a position where you have more liquidity. And with that excess liquidity, you should start looking for opportunities that you know everyone else at a lower income or net worth level can't access. Typically, that's where you start looking at private opportunities that at a minimum, you're writing a $100,000 check.
Give me an example of like three or four of these.
Think venture or angel investments. Think co-investing in real estate. So not just being an LP or a smaller investor in a fund, but you and two other people are all the fund is, right? So co-investing as opposed to being a limited partner with 40 other investors. Not to say that that's not a good thing, but you now have the opportunity to command more of the balance sheet. When you have that kind of an income, you're saving so much in taxes and you retain.
Yeah. So you get the tax advantages, you get better economics, and because there's fewer people in the deal, you have more control. Yeah,
that's right. Tony Robbins has a book called The Holy Grail of Investing. This might otherwise be referred to as co-GP investing. So rather than being an LP, I want to have the same seat as the GPs in the deal.
That's awesome, man. What else?
So that happens typically between 1 and 2 and certainly up higher. Once you're from 3 to 5 million, chances are that income has only showed up net because you have a business or an ecosystem that runs on these automations. Nice. So you increasing your income is simply a matter of how much more gas are you putting into that engine, or how much more efficient can you run and operate? Which also means that you've been doing this a little bit longer than everyone else. Chances are you've saved and been financially disciplined to even get to this point. Oftentimes with an income of 3 million or more, you have liquidity in the millions. And if you are in that position, you're no longer investing as what we call a retail investor, like how you, me, mom and pop traditionally invest, maybe some real estate, stocks, bonds, retirement accounts, you name it. You might be considered an institutional investor, or what's called a qualified purchaser, having such a substantial net worth that not just you and your friends being co-GPs, but there are very large institutions that if you yourself are bringing $1 million to the table or $500,000 to the table, or you and a number of folks are putting together a special purpose vehicle for the purposes of one investment, these institutions will let you in to their multi-billion dollar projects at really, really exciting economics. For example, we're part of a firm or we're part of a group that's going to be investing in some real estate in the Bay Area. And most people hear California or the Bay Area and say, whoa, that's expensive. It is. This deal is hundreds of millions of dollars. And at the end of it, it'll be worth, let's call it $1.5 billion. So the ability to get access to a deal like that, number one, but then have the financial horsepower to contribute to it meaningfully. Well, if we get a 25 or 30% IRR, you can't get that at $500,000 or $1 million a year in income. But if you're at $3 million bucks in income and beyond, chances are you've got the financial horsepower to find and execute on those kind of deals.
Yeah, fantastic, man. Love the breakdown of all of that. You know, you talk about first generation wealth. Tell me how important that is. Tell me about who is a first generation wealth earner, and tell me what's the possibilities for these people.
Yeah. I'm first gen wealth, right? I don't consider myself wealthy in the same sense as, you know, some of my clients, but I do have a level of freedom that we talked about earlier that I didn't have when we came to this country, and my mother didn't have. So because of that, first gen wealth to me is being the person that creates that freedom or that unhurriedness you talked about for them and their family. The first time that that happens, that person is the wealth creator in their family. What I find, and the reason I have such a big passion around these wealth creators, is very different than those who inherit wealth, not to demean them at all, because that's still very meaningful. And there are lots of examples of families who've done that very well. But when you're first gen wealth, you know that you're in a position you've never been in before, just like you're the first one who ever did X. Maybe it's the first one in your family to become a doctor, first one in your family to become an athlete, first one in your family to start a business. So getting to this level of wealth, you're the first again. And as successful as you are, oftentimes these people feel almost as infant as they did when they were starting on whatever journey they're on.
Yeah, it's like you never really arrive, and there's still a little chip on your shoulder of imposter syndrome.
Totally. But at the same time, they're just as competitive as everyone else. So they know that there are people saving millions in taxes. They know there are people doing deals with BlackRock and Blackstone. So they feel like, now that I'm here, I'm a baby, but I got to get there. And there might be, you know, the same seat at the table as my peers or other folks around me. So that being the case, I look at those folks as some of the most fun, dynamic, energetic people to work with, because oftentimes, and this is agnostic of age, they're not just happy being worth 10, 25, or 30 million. They want to be worth 100 million. They want to be worth half, so on and so forth. And it's not
to the choir, man. That's
what I'm saying, right?
This podcast.
And it's not just about the numbers. It's the fact that now that they're here, there's no reason in their mind why they can't get there. Mm-hmm. And they understand that how they've gotten here has been by having really great, sophisticated, smart people around them. And they want to continue to do that such that they continue elevating their game, being around the right people.
All right. So what advice do you have for people who are comfortable? They have their job, they're making, let's say, $1 million a year or even $500,000 a year. They've invested wisely. They've read the books you talked about, starting all the way from Dave Ramsey to Robert Kiyosaki to even like more sophisticated things like what Tony Robbins is putting out. Mm-hmm. They invest in some real estate. They own their practice. And then the question is, why do they have to be the one? Can't they be, and is that good enough? Or can they still be the one and go for it?
Yeah.
My thought process is, you know, there's always one in the, there's a family tree that looks pretty homogenous, and there's like this one spike that comes out of it. Like, I'm like, I want to be that spike, you know, or like that, the person who changes the family tree forever. But the question is the comfort and the safety of what they've already accomplished. Can you comment on all that?
100%. And these thoughts aren't exclusively my own. I have to give credit where credit's due. I learned a long time ago from a guy named Ed Milet, some folks might know him, that exactly what you mentioned, there's always the one in a family. If they haven't shown up yet, chances are it could be you or that person's yet to come. But the one in his book, The Power of One More, is this person that often has this dissatisfaction. He says that which you do not hate, you will eventually tolerate. So to answer your question, if someone's tolerating this enoughness, I don't have advice for them. I can't change the way that they think or feel about their situation. What I can acknowledge is that you're either growing or dying. And if you're not growing, which in my opinion takes some intent, chances are you're on this side of the equation. And I never want to be on this side of the equation. So in my personal opinion, I'm always going to be growing, and it might look different, you know, depending on the season of life that I'm in, but I always want to be growing something. Maybe it's a new skill, maybe it's my income, maybe it's my net worth, maybe it's the impact that I'm having on other people. I need to be growing. And if you take that mindset, chances are you will find that a lot of the things you ultimately want to accomplish require more money. So you either have to increase your income, increase your net worth, increase your charitable giving, increase the organization around how you give to the causes, communities, and people you care about. And, you know, all of those are driven by economics. So my advice would be find your dissatisfaction, don't tolerate mediocrity. And if you do, you know, it doesn't have to do just the numbers, but the causes and people you care about will ultimately be the beneficiaries.
That's awesome, man. As we start wrapping up here, who are the top three or four role models that you look at when you're making some decisions, and who's in your like inner mindset council of wise elders?
That's a great question. I'm a big fan of what I mentioned earlier, right? Success leaves clues. I heard it said that you should never take fitness advice from a plumber, and you should never take medical advice from your hairstylist. That being the case, I try to look to different people depending on the counselor advice that I need. So I happen to be single, unmarried, you know, all these things. If I'm looking for relationship advice, I'm not going to go to my single friends. I want to talk to and understand, or even if I don't talk to them, I want to take a perspective or look at the situation from how I think my married friends with kids and strong families might react or act. Same thing in business, same thing with finances, you name it. But to answer your question directly, I think the first place I always turn is, I'm a Christian, so the Bible. I look to the wisdom that has transcended generations and in my opinion is eternal. Beyond that, I go to the people that exhibit that in their respective fields. So business, investing, relationships, you name it. And then last but not least, there's a handful of people, I call it my inner circle. Mm. I haven't formalized it, and I don't think they know this, but typically it's just the people that if I'm reaching a wall, I either spend time with them talking about something that has nothing to do with my issues, or I'll ask them a very pointed and specific question, and it unlocks some things for me that helps to make a decision.
Beautiful, man. Love that. Let's talk about greater causes. Like, what's the impact you want to have on the world, my friend?
You know, that's changed quite a bit. Vikram, I had the opportunity to go back to Africa, Zimbabwe specifically, for my first time since immigrating this past December. And I haven't shared it often, but I cried on the flight leaving LAX to go overseas. I don't think I knew how impactful that would be until having that experience. And I've had the privilege of supporting a lot of people in their philanthropic and charitable endeavors. For me, I have a structured, you know, philanthropy strategy and organization for that. But I never attached a real purpose to it because I didn't know. I'm pretty young, so I didn't know, you know, what am I going to devote the rest of my life to? I think that moment that I experienced was one that gave me a sign of passion that people spend a long time trying to reconnect with either their roots or their family or things that they've been artificially or legally disconnected from. And if I can empower people to reconnect with those roots, those people, you name it, I think that would bring me a lot of joy. And then, of course, business-wise, what we do is something that empowers people to maximize their wealth. And I think ultimately, if you do that in a way that supports your, in my case, my end clients, communities, their families, their causes that they care about, that's also a win for me. So I'd say those two things are what I want to spend my time doing.
And let's do a couple of final questions here.
Sure.
If you could put one like billboard outside of, you know, Times Square for a whole year and it'd be the one message, what would be that message? Or it could be a quote, it could be anything, but what's like, you were given a whole year of Times Square, the main signage.
To your point, I think it'd be a quote or a phrase that incites someone to think.
You gotta be better than that. What, I actually need the quote, man.
My two favorite quotes, the ones that are coming to my mind right now, are success leaves clues and success loves speed. Okay. I hate it when people move slow. So yeah, if I could just put on a billboard, success loves speed, and then a QR code right underneath that to people to scan, the people that scan it right away are probably the ones that move with some speed, and they're gonna be successful.
Yeah. So. One of my mentors, Craig Ballantyne, loves that quote as well. Success loves speed. It's a great one.
Love speed.
Let's do this. Hot seat and rapid fire. There's a little bit of bonus here.
Okay.
So if we have a hypothetical limitless MD listener, mm-hmm, married physician, two kids, 750 income, no wealth plan. Top three things you recommend.
Emergency fund, automated investments, and estate plan.
Okay. These are just rapid fire. Faith or fortune?
Faith.
Crypto or real estate?
Both.
Podcast?
Not investment advice.
Podcast or print?
Podcast.
Okay. Awesome, bro. Well done, man. And
yeah,
last but not least, for all our limitless listeners, I know the people at the retreat got this exclusive. I want to give it to my listeners as well. I hope you can give me the hookup.
100%.
Tell us about how they can get into your ecosystem. I know you have something special for these guys. You created a new product called Access.
Yep.
Can you share a little bit about it and also how people can learn more about everything you're doing?
Totally. Well, I'll start with the more boring one. If you want to learn more about Christian and just me, my website relaunches at the beginning of July. So it's just christianmatetsua.com. Vic, I'm sure you can link that or tag my social media.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put that in there.
That's
K-R-I-S-T-I-A-N M-T-E-T-W-A. .com. So put that in the show notes, guys.
Perfect. ChristianMatetsua.com. And then what's more exciting is what Synergy Private's doing. So Synergy Private, for those who don't know, is a family office. We represent a number of different families, helping them with everything within their financial ecosystem. Part of being a family office means we see a lot of investment opportunities that are really, really cool. Hailey Bieber, for instance, just sold Road Beauty to Elf for close to $1 billion in valuation. And those are the kinds of things that you want to see when it's only worth $5 million or $10 or $20 million as a venture investor. Now, there's no guaranteeing that everything you invest in will do something like that, but we see deals so often and so many of them that we just can't participate in everything. At the same time, we recognize that there's a community like yours, Vikram, and even ours that even though they might not be in the family office, they might be accredited investors, they might have the liquidity and the interest to participate in those sorts of deals. So we've put together a community we're calling Access that's primarily educational driven. I'm going to be teaching my own courses on how I think about private market investing, real estate, private equity, venture capital, even private lending and things like that. So the education alone is going to be a massive value, but we're also going to be sharing some of the deals and opportunities that we see.
That's going to be awesome.
Within that ecosystem. So that's officially launched and that ecosystem is live as of today. If any of your listeners want to go there, it's synergyprivate.com/access. And if they decide to move forward, Vikram, I'm more than happy to give you guys a code. The code will be limitless. We'll give you a 50% discount for joining Access for anyone in your community.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much. That's really exciting. All right, my friend. Hopefully I will see you at one of our upcoming retreats. Thank you guys for listening in and listening to Christian's story and about his journey and how he's helping some of the most successful people in the country and perhaps the world really take it to the next level. I thought his advice is really spot on. So until next time, guys, be phenomenal.
Thanks, Vikram.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Limitless MD. If you found value from this episode, I encourage you to share this episode with a friend and let me know by leaving a review. For more information, make sure you check out the links in the show notes below or simply visit vikramraya.com. Until next time, be phenomenal.